We'll call the board meeting to order at 1:37 on February 18th, a meeting that had been rescheduled. I appreciate your patience and to work within changing the meeting date. I hope it caused no inconvenience for anyone other than Jeff Pearson, but we're all doing well. We won't go there.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure who's here. We have a quorum. So we'll go ahead and move forward. You've all had an opportunity to review the
consent calendar.
To review the consent calendar and all the reports that go with it. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, a motion is in order to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If I may.
Please.
We're asking for a little bit of help from all of our pools and the advisory committee. And so what we're asking for is either people that make or second the motion to identify themselves by name so it can be part of our recording, or the person running a meeting to announce who made the first and who made the second. So if you would please humor me for this time around and state your name if you made the first and state your name if you made the second.
Ethan DeBoo made the first.
Gene Koopman made the second. And from now on, we'll let Bob take care of it because that's why we pay him the big bucks.
Yes. Good suggestion.
He has to show up first.
I apologize to the board. I was distracted prior to the meeting, so I wanted to pick up the extra copies. I heard what you said, and we will identify those during any actions and motions and identify the people who made the motions and the seconds. Number C, water transactions.
Mr. Chairman, that is part of the consent.
Consent calendar, I'm sorry.
Call for the question.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you all. My mind is somewhere else right now. Let's get back on track. City of Fontana motion.
Mr. Chairman, this item was pulled from the agendas for both the appropriative pool and the non-ag pool. I will report for Mr. Harima, who regrettably could not be here today. He's in a trial. You'll understand from that report why this business item, there's nothing to discuss, and we should probably skip it at this point.
Any comments? So ordered. We'll move on. Mid-year review. Joe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so that everyone understands, this is the same presentation that was provided to the appropriative pool. A very condensed report was provided to the non-agricultural pool. This is our semi-annual mid-year review, financial review for the fiscal year 2013-2014, as of February 2014. We're going to be reporting on July 1st, 2013 through December 31st, 2013, the first 6 months. Our year-to-date budgeted expenses were scheduled at $4,121,899. Our actual expenses to date for the first 6 months, $3,199,121, with a under budget variance almost $1 million, but it's at $922,778. When we look at the three components of what that variance consists of, we have the G&A expenses over budget by $60,953. We have the OBMP expenses under budget by $29,724, and the project implementation project expenses $954,007 under budget. Now, traditionally, we've always looked at those three categories of G&A, OBMP expenses, and project, and that's how we slice and dice and analyze the expenses.
Back up one question. Back up a second.
Yes, sir.
On the project expenses, was that because they actually run that much lower than expected, or because some of the projects have been put off or anything, something?
Some of the projects that were scheduled, basically when we do the implementation projects, those budgets are broken up 1/12 of the year. So if the activity doesn't happen exactly right off the bat on July, August, or September, and it starts later in the year, that's part of what's going on here.
Well, not necessarily that we'll have an extensive
savings
at the
end of the fiscal year. Again, this is just a snapshot of where we are at the first 6 months.
Okay.
So now what we're going to do is look next at the G&A, the OBMP, and the implementation project expenses. So when we look at the G&A expenses, you'll see we are $60,000 over budget. You'll notice that there are some categories, admin, salaries, benefit costs, over budget by $142,000, water master legal, $78,000. There are some expenses that are under budget, but we are over budget by $60,000. The category columns, basically July through December actual, in the first column, the second column, six-month budget. Then if it's a positive number, that's an overvariance. If it's a negative number, it's undervariance. And this is basically the percent of budget.
Joe, do you consider this to continue on this trend, or do you project this to essentially remain at 60?
Basically, there are two categories. There's really within this category, there is the $60,000 payment that we paid to a former employee as part of a settlement agreement. That's really what's pushing this $60,000.
Okay.
We also, as I've mentioned many times before in our reports, we do have this administrative legal services that is over budget. Further into the presentation, we'll talk a little bit more about the full legal expenses when we roll everything up together. But again, this is just strictly the G&A expenses and the items that go into making up our G&A expenses.
Joe, on 8471, what's the why are we $30,000 under?
That is the 8471 is where we put that's the Ag Pool Special Fund.
Special
$65,000. Any other questions on this slide?
Doing well.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to talk about the, and I just realized it should be OBMP instead of OMBP. That was a test. Everyone is now paying attention. Spell check, I guess.
Bob's dyslexic, so he wouldn't know.
I just reverse him.
You know, I would say that I am too, but I don't think you want your chief financial officer to.
Not so much.
OBMP expenses under budget by $29,000. Our project expenses, you can see there's some categories above budget. Most of the categories are below budget, $954,000. Add the two items together, we're $922,000 under budget. Now, historically, we've always talked about G&A, OBMP, and the project expenses. In reality, and those we could consider those as being categories, in reality, there's also other expenses that go into making up our actual expenses. So, for example, if we look at just G&A expenses, within the G&A category, there's labor, salary, and overhead. There's some legal costs, but you'll notice that what's missing is engineering services. When we move to OBMP expenses and look at those from a category, you'll see that all three items, you've got labor, you've got legal, and then you've got engineering services. When you look at the implementation projects, you've got labor, overhead, salaries in there. No legal expenses, but you do have engineering. So when you roll those all up together, again, there's that $3,199,121. That paints a picture of where WaterMaster expenses are, but it doesn't look at the three other big categories that WaterMaster always looks at, and that's the labor and salary, just slicing off the labor costs and looking to see what that is. Labor, overhead, salaries, that's $1,999,000. When we look at just legal, pulling legal all together and looking at that from a legal perspective, $556,345. And then when we look at our engineering services, that's $648,524. So all three of those total up to the same number. So really, historically, we've always kind of looked at these three categories. From my perspective, I like to look at these because this gives us the total of what our labor cost is. This tells us where our legal services are at. Are we over, under budget? And then on our engineering services, same thing, over, under budget. If you look at just the three categories, you're going to be missing some items here, and you're missing some items here. So now that we've talked a little bit about G&A, OBMP, and project expenses, let's go in and look just strictly at the labor cost, the legal services, and then the engineering services. When we look at our labor cost, same columns, you've got the first 6 months actual, first 6 month budget, over under budget percent, and then here's our annual budget. We budgeted $1,391,641. Currently, we're $51,000 over budget, and the real main reason is this $60,000, again, as we discussed, the payment for the settlement agreement. When you look at some of the different costs, you'll see there's some items over budget, some items under budget. But overall, if we excluded this, we'd be right at budget. Any questions on this slide?
You know, Joe, on the previous slide, it might be, you know, I don't want to tell you your presentation method, but if you threw your dollars into those, it would really give some people, instead of just the X's identifying that it is a component, it'd give us a good idea of the magnitude, how it's developed.
Oh, okay. I could certainly do that. Maybe at the year end in a couple, two or three months. I also don't have a problem of adding this slide onto the actual report that we do each and every month. So maybe that's another way that we can start looking at these. Again, you know, part of historic Water Master numbers have always been these three numbers, but from my perspective, it really doesn't paint the exact true picture of where we are each and every month. Now, if we look at the Water Master legal, same format, actual budget, under or over percent, and then this column shows the annual budget. We budgeted $757,000. You notice the first 6 months were $142,000 over budget. When we start looking at those categories, there's really four categories: the personnel matters, the CCG motion, safe yield recount, and the City of Fontana motion. All four of those items were not budgeted for during the year.
Or anticipated.
We did have $7,000 budgeted for personnel matters. That's really only for the general manager's contract, which we're right at where we expected to be with that. But all of these other items were, as Bob mentioned, unanticipated and unbudgeted. When we look...
That $90,000 on personal matters is not including the $60,000 on the previous slide. That's in addition to?
That is in addition to. And those two items, there's really two items that's pushing that cost. There's the former CEO, Desi Alvarez, and the pension cost that's going into that, along with the other personnel-related item.
These are legal services, though.
These are just strictly legal costs. That is correct. This is Brownstein, the Brownstein cost.
When you say pension, you mean legal associated with the pension?
That is the legal, that are the services that Brownstein has done in regards to that pending case.
Okay.
When we look at the categories, there's three specific categories. There's the Water Master Legal Services, $78,000 over budget. The admin services that break down to advisory, board meeting, appropriative, agricultural, that's $12,000 under budget. When we look at the OBMP costs, $75,000 over budget. one of the things that you'll see later in the presentation is we are requesting that we do a $150,000 transfer for legal and $60,000 transfer for the salaries. That gives us the $210,000 that we're going to be discussing soon. I've gone ahead and taken that $150,000 and allocated it $75,000 to personal matters, $75,000 to the safe yield recount. So that now brings us to a budget of $907,000 compared to where I think we're going to be at year end, $900,000.
So you've just moved it around.
Well, this is in addition to. So this is an amendment to the budget. So we would be including, or we would be increasing the budget $210,000. Any questions on this slide? Moving to the third and final, this is the engineering services. And you notice again, same columns, actual budget over budget percent. Our actual actual budget, $1,932,768 for engineering services. You'll see here this $476,000. That's where we are at for the first 6 months. That is not going to move into the next. So you really can't take that half a million and say, we're going to be $1 million by adding the two. This is really just a timing difference between where we laid in the budget and where the actual expenses are going to be. When we look at our actual projections, you'll see that this number is going to be, in essence, reduced by almost the full amount. One of the things that we have the engineering services Wildermuth basically do for us each quarter, they provide us what's known as the ECAC report. That's the estimated cost of completion. Basically, the Wildermuth Engineering Services each month has a projection of where they think their costs are going to be compared to where the total budget is going to be. And that's what this report is. So you'll see here's their original budget of $1,000,008. We did have an adjustment of some carryover funds. So we started with $1,000,009. And then you can see each month, here's the July, August, September. These are actuals. Then we get to the projected for January. And then we continue projected February, March. You'll see the dollars increasing here, some of the different projects that are being, that will be expended. When we end, the total projected is to be $1.8 million, almost $1.9 million. The savings is around $44,000. So you'll see that almost $500,000. Will basically be used up in the next 6 months, leaving us basically a balance of about $45,000 under. Any questions on this slide? Okay, moving forward, one of the last kind of pieces of the puzzle for our 6 months is the carryover funds. If you recall, we carried over $806,000, and you'll see $227,000 was for the Chino Hills ASR project. Here's about $108,000 for some engineering services. The Harupa Pump Station for $150,000. Wineville Basin, $150,000. And then four projects, Turner Basin, Hickory, CB20 Turnout, and some miscellaneous basins. So all of these rolled up to be the $806,000. To date, in the first 6 months, we've spent, we've got about $20,000 allocated against. And you can see that they're color-coded. So we've got $10,000 going against the $19,000, so there's still a little bit left. The $9,000 against the $87,000, there's a large portion of that. The Wineville, we've got $32,000 against the $150,000, and you can see basically the pattern. Hickory Basin is basically fully paid for. Turner Basin is about $3,000 left. So we've got, of this $806,000, we've got $665,000 of our carried over left. Now, at the end of the fiscal year, if we still have some of these funds left over, we'll carry that over into the next fiscal year. And if we have any new projects or any expenses that we've funded for this fiscal year that we know are going to carry over into several fiscal years, we'll go ahead and carry those over.
You know, on that there, like Hickory and Turner, you said, well, Hickory anyway, you said was completely finished. So that $30,009 was just an excess budget over the expenses for that project, correct?
Well, that when we carried over $30,009 from last fiscal year into this fiscal year,
yeah.
And we basically spent that money. So basically, we carried over 800,000 or 806,000 into this fiscal year's budget, and I have them allocated based on, or sorry, I have them allocated by exactly what we're going to spend those funds on. Okay. So, for example, this Harupa pumping station, 150,000, I can't just simply say, oh, I'm 60,000 off by salaries. I'm just going to pull this. I'm just going to pull money out of here. These are for very specific projects. Okay.
But, you know, okay, let's say that, like, that 30,009 in the previous year, that was actually a surplus.
The 30,009, we
and it wasn't because there wasn't work still to be done.
No, we had budgeted 30,009 for the Hickory Basin, and it had not been completed.
None of these projects have been scrubbed, correct?
That was scrubbed, meaning removed?
That's right.
That is correct. None of these have been removed. Mm-hmm. And if you look in the back of your presentation, I believe it's on page 135 through 152, you'll see the Chino Basin / IUA projects. That's basically all the information that shows up about the Wineville, Turner Basin, Hickory Basin, all of those different projects and their status. Finally, the piece, when we start looking at where we're going to be at end of fiscal year, June 30, 2014. Currently, right now, our amended approved budget is $7,593,616. We have a proposed amendment of $210,000. That's the $150,000 for legal, $60,000 for salaries. That would bring us to an updated amended budget of $7,803,616. I've looked at those costs and project that we're going to be about $180,000 under budget. We're going to be around $7.6 million at year end. And then that breaks down to be, again, these three categories, G&A, OBMP, and project, $22,000 under budget on G&A, $38,000 under budget on OBMP, and about $119,000 under budget on the project expenses, implementation projects. Here's
so,
the budget.
Joe, why are you going after 210 if you've already projected that you're going to be under budget on all three of your operating accounts?
Because I'm not sure that we're going to be at 7.6. And according to our Water Master policy, I am not allowed to spend any money within specific categories unless they're fully funded. So I can't, per se, rob Peter to pay Paul. So if we... are under budget, then or over budget, I'm not allowed to expend in that category.
Do these additional funds, are they going to come out of reserves or are they going to come out of assessments?
They will, let me, the funds attachment A13-12-01, when we did our budget and assessed everyone, there was a reserve fund of $780,000. My proposal is to take $210,000 out of this reserve fund, funds that are already sitting there waiting to be used. That would leave us about $500,000 in that fund. And at the end of the year, if there are some funds left over, we don't lose these funds. These basically will go back into the cash. And at the end of the year, basically cash not used gets refunded back to the parties based on how they paid their assessments.
Has that ever happened?
Yes, we do that each and every year. We've done that for the last 3 years. If there's any amount of funds left over after we do all of our calculations, the percentage of that, an amount gets refunded back based on how someone paid. So if you paid 3% of the total, you would get 3% of whatever the balance of excess cash is.
What are you continuing a reserve account going forward after this year?
Yes, we each year when we do the budget,
you're going to do it the percentage what similar to develop what you did this year with the 700,000 you'll do next year.
Yes,
based on the budget.
Yes. So, for example, this fiscal year we did a 10% administrative budget reserve, which is about $137,000, and then the OBMP is at 15%. That's 500 some odd thousand. So that's where we're coming up with this 780,000. So that's already been funded. That's already been paid for through assessments. Next fiscal year, when we go to do our budget, we'll do the same thing. We'll calculate what our budget's going to be. We'll calculate what the reserve is. And then I'll look to see, do we have enough cash in the bank to cover that? If we do, then we basically put that on the books and carry that forward. This is the first time that I know of that we've actually gone to the reserve and pulled money out. Normally what we do at this time is we just kind of rejuggle around the budget. If you notice, there really isn't any spots where we can really rejuggle. If you look at the engineering services, it shows $500,000, but at year-end, we're not going to have that $500,000. We've got to pay for the legal services some way.
So your reserve account gets credited back on the assessment of this year or for the following year, and it reduces those who have to pay in based upon their operating safe yield.
Well, the admin reserve is based on production.
Okay, yeah, it's split.
The OBMP is based on operating safe yield. Yeah. But to answer your question, yes.
Yeah.
And you'll see here, again, here's how the breakdown is, the $60,000, $75,000, $75,000, giving us to the $210,000. And then the $210,000, here's where we show the reserve budget, $780,000. We'll be left with $570,000. The action items for today, you have two of them. The first one is to receive and file the mid-year review report for the period of July 1st, 2013 through December 31st, 2013 as presented. And then the second item, recommend the advisory committee approval of the budget amendment form A13-12-01. That's the $210,000.
Before you go there, let's light the place up and see if committee members have any questions of you, Joe?
And just to provide the appropriative pool, approve both recommendations, and the non-ag approve both recommendations.
That was my next question, but thank you. You went through a thorough report. Any members have questions, concerns? Now's the time to do it. Hearing none.
I'd just like to start with a good report.
Good report.
Mr. How about excellent?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we receive and file a mid-year report for July 1st, 2013 through December 31st, 2013 as presented.
Motion made by Jeff Pearson. Is there support?
Second.
Support, Rob Vandenheuvel. Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Again, recommend that recommend the advisory committee approval on form A13-12-01. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Jeff Pearson. We have a support.
Second.
We have a motion by Jeff Pearson, seconded by Rob Vandenheuvel. Any questions or comments? Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Carry.
Thank you.
You're to be commended. I mean, I even understood it. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Peter, we have a phone system.
Mr. Chairman, we barely do.
That's why I'm not getting an answer when I call, right?
Okay. We have an antiquated phone system, one that actually was a heritage or legacy system that came when Watermaster moved to this building. It was already old. So we're looking to replace it. We're looking at replacing it with a phone system that will lower our costs in terms of our ongoing costs. And it'll pay for itself, actually, within 12 months. So it's not a budgeted item, but it doesn't need to be. We'll make the cash outlay from reserves. It's within the budget expenses. We can make that without asking for any further approval. But we'll reap the benefit right away, and you'll see it in the form of lower expenses next year. So you'll see it if you know what to look for, but it'll be built into the budget.
And better service.
Yes. Best we can. The reason this is coming through the pools for advice is normally this item would be approved by the general manager. Our purchasing rules provide a limit for my authority to sign, which is $10,000. And when we look at the equipment plus the service contract, they exceed $10,000. So we felt the prudent thing to do would be to just bring that through the pools and the advisory committee for advice to the board. For the board is going to be a routine item, normal course of business. We would hope it would be approved, but we're open and listening to any advice you might have on this item.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I met a young lady the other night at the restaurant, and she had her little iPad, and I said, oh, you got that for Christmas. She said, no, it's an update from what I got from Christmas. My question is, Peter, technology is changing at a rapid pace. This new system, will it do what you need to do for the time being?
Yes, one of the primary advantages is that it's going to move us into what's called VoIP, Voice over Internet Protocol. And so it'll enhance our ability to communicate, also communicate within ourselves, within from Watermaster staff to consultants and everybody else, and conduct our business over the Internet as opposed to landlines. It'll give us access to messages when we miss them. It'll give us access to presentations and more functionality than we have today.
Great. I only ask that because I saw Nathan DeBoom talking to himself the other day when, in fact, he was talking to his new phone.
And I look at myself a lot.
Peter, you need no action on this, so we're excited for the equipment that'll be coming in.
Thank you.
Any questions? Let's move on. Ag transfers. Mr. Kuhlman, you and I have had some discussions over the last few weeks, and you accept, you and I talked about ag transfers. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to share with the committee?
Yeah, I do have some concerns and questions about it, but one thing, basically I need more, I think the committee needs more information, and that I would like to get copies of all of the Form 9, the voluntary transfer agreements. And I'd like to have some kind of timeline on when we're going to get that.
That's number one. Peter, can you respond to that?
Yes, I can tell you some. I can give you some information with more to come. We have been working with your attorney to formulate a question in the way that will be useful for the pool, for what the pool is trying to ascertain. And we believe that you actually need more than just the Forms 9.
Yes, we do.
And so we're working with Tracy, and actually Tracy filed with us the request for information, which is a standard form that we require of anyone that is requesting information from Watermaster. And the reason we do that is so that we can keep track of what's been asked, we can respond, and we can also prioritize our relatively limited resources as to how and when we respond. So that form has been filed with us, with Tracy, and we'll work with her and try to get you the information as soon as we can. And if we have any questions in terms of prioritizing that, we'll work with you and with Tracy to make sure that we're responsive.
Appreciate
it. Peter, this goes back a long time, so I'm not sure if you really know, but this goes back, I think, when Tracy Stewart was still here. We paid a lot of money, some equipment, maybe Jeff, you remember, it was supposed to be where all of this information, I'm not just talking about these forms here, but literally all the information from Watermaster would be put on like a server. It would have some kind of special name for it, and it could be retrieved almost instantly. Do we still have it, and is it being used, or is it just antiquated and we don't have it anymore, or what? Remember that, Jeff?
It was all of the notebooks and records were scanned into some type of a system.
Yes. Yes, we do have and actively maintain a database that is primarily focused on the production side of the house. So we have information on the wells, who they belong to, when they get sampled, and on and on. So we can relate that information to production. The information as far as voluntary agreements that provide for that transfer has not been part of that database. And we're actually now, with the advent of the interest from the pool and the question specifically on the Prado Park and El Prado Golf Course, we've asked Frank, who works for Danny, to go ahead and incorporate that information in the database. It'll be a lot easier to retrieve all the information.
Well, going on, it's not particular to the forms that I asked for, but there's a lot of other forms, like the transfers between among the appropriators and everything else. Is there any reason? Because from my understanding, my memory isn't as good. It literally could millions and millions of pages could be stored on this thing for almost instant retrieval. At least that's what we were told at the time. And I do remember it was a big ticket item. Do we store that kind of information on there? And if we don't, why not?
Danny, you were here a little longer. We don't want to put too much pressure on Pete. Can you respond, please?
Yeah. I do know what you're referring to. I can't remember the exact name. We don't use it anymore. It did get antiquated. It's what we're working on a replacement for it now, SharePoint. I just don't remember the name of the old one. It was a document management system.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. And we don't. Yeah, we're working on a new one. It's not in place yet. However, the Form 9s, what you're inquiring about, that was never part of that system. What goes into that system is things like the meeting packages and water transfers and some types of documents.
Is there any reason, you know, evidently we're going to, that was antiquated, and we're going to get something new and better. Is there any reason, you know, with the amount of storage that's out there and the storage is relatively cheap, why don't we put everything on there? Because the retrieval of it is so much easier and quicker for regardless of what you're after versus the way it seems to be going now.
Did you want me to respond, Peter? We're working on it.
I think SharePoint, the name of the system that we're implementing today is called SharePoint. And I believe it'll be able to handle everything, including water transfers, including land use conversions, all the correspondence, all the GIS maps. Everything will be accessible through that. It's a reference system that will allow us to, you can ask a question many different ways and get at the same document.
So I guess what we paid for 15 years ago is no longer usable, and the data that is contained within it is
trash.
Well, if I understand correctly how it works, the data is still okay. It's just a bunch of scanned documents. Then the system, which I can't remember the name of it, it was the software that reached into the server and grabbed all the documents based on like your keyword search.
Right.
So it's that software that we don't use anymore. We have a replacement software called SharePoint. All that old scan documents, those are still there. We've been working on scanning everything else. I mean, we have boxes of old documents in the warehouse, and we have binders of documents, you know, in our office space. And we've been working toward getting them all scanned. So now they're scanned, but they're not linked into that system yet.
Okay, but so this new technology you're going to use, it will be able to reach in and use, or at least read that the old file, so it's not lost.
If I understand correctly, I guess.
Because okay, I mean, there's stuff that goes, you know, I would assume going back to 1978 or whatever when the adjudication was
first. Right. Yeah. It's just it's PDFs, so it can still go in and grab them.
Okay,
it's
good.
The new one's not set up to do that yet.
So it is digitized. I mean, it is retrievable through electronic page.
And we OCR them after we digitize them, after we scan them, they're OCR'd so that that's
so you can search
character recognition.
Yeah,
so they're searchable. Right. So it'll try and hunt for like the keyword inside the document.
Just to have some fun, and then Peter, I have a comment made to you, but Rob Bannon here, but Mill Producers Council, at one time we were going to have all these papers of many, many years of working legislation and state code issues. We were going to record all that. And by the time we looked at the expense to get the manpower or lady power to put all that data into some kind of a retrievable file, the expense was amazing. So again, Jane, we asked for this. We want it. We need it. Do we have the ability? Do we have the manpower to get it in a way that we can all watch or look or review?
We think we do, or we shortly will, if we don't now. We tried to tackle the same question as to what do you do with old records and how do you create that digitized version. So for the 6 months of the prior fiscal year and 6 months of this, excuse me, 6 months of the first half of this fiscal year and as a separate contract, let me rewind. we hired a technician to be with us on a part-time basis, Nick, a wonderful young man who just got off of his contract with us. And for 6 months that ended in June 30 of 2013 and stretched to about 7 months that just ended last week, he was sitting quietly in the copy room, going through each and every binder that we have, taking it gently apart, scanning the documents, and creating that file. And actually, if you see through our library and everything else, you'll see most of the binders have a label that says scanned on it. That's a sign that Nick was there.
He's a young, bright man.
And so he worked through religiously and just went through that. And we ended his service when his service had to be ended. But he's pretty much gone through all of the records that we have. And so that those documents have been digitized. As Danny mentioned, they've been digitized in a way that they can be searched. And we're working with Pat Park, our IS support gentleman, to implement SharePoint that will allow us to search all those records from the past.
Mr. Chairman?
Rob?
I know we haven't talked about the specific requests. It sounds like everything so far has been more of a historical nature, looking back at some stuff. Is part of what Gene is talking about on a go-forward basis, what information is available to the ag pool on future arrangements that are entered into?
That's a fun question. I appreciate that, and that was going to be my next comment to Peter. Peter, we're a fun group.
So,
and Mr. Koopman, if you sat next to him as many years as I have, he has requested information of many of your predecessors, many, over a long period of time, Russ, and it was always coming, but it never arrived. And so we understand he's given some big requests out here, and we appreciate your time, your interest, and your support for us to get what several board members have asked for years. So, yes, Rob, I think, as I understand it, we're looking to have this information going forward.
If it helps any to understand the process the Watermaster goes through, these voluntary agreements, as well as the land use conversion paperwork that goes through, which are all part of ag transfer, we ask the appropriators to reconfirm those each and every year. We send them a letter saying, here's what we have on record for you. We send them a map saying, here's where we think these are. And we need you to confirm to us with a Form 9 or an addendum to Form 9 if ownership has changed or something is different than the year past. And tell us if these are still the ones that you claim are eligible for voluntary agreement or land use conversion. We collect that information. This happens in the springtime each year. We collect the information, and then Danny and Frank, who works for Danny, check that information. Is the property description accurate? Does it overlap? Does a voluntary agreement property overlap with a land use conversion, which is a no-no? Does it fit the criteria of being within the area of the basin that's acceptable for voluntary agreements and land use conversions? And if all that works, then we give them the credit for that one particular year. So that process is something that's live, and we do that each and every year. As I understand the request is, hey, let's look at the beginning and see, do we have these agreements in place for all of them? And that's a really good question to ask, and it's prompted us to kind of go back and refresh all records from the very beginning. So we'll have access to that. And from this point forward, anytime the ag pool wants to see what happened this year, we have really good records that will only get better with time.
That brings up a question from something you just said that you know, we request information on an annual basis, and which is good. On the one that is specific to El Prado Regional Park, evidently you haven't gotten an annual agreement from the city of Chino.
We have.
Then why was the copy that I got from 202?
Well, that was the original that set it up, and that goes right back to the Tracy Stewart days.
That I'm aware of.
Right. And I think I don't know Tracy. I've heard great things about Tracy, including her intelligence and her memory. However, what we found as a crew working later is that the record keeping from those days was not particularly good.
We'll argue that.
We have had annual exchange with the city of Chino, and on an annual basis they confirm that. But this is something that, excuse me, once it was started, then it gets confirmed each and every year that that's indeed a voluntary agreement.
On that now, is it, when you say you get a new Form 9, is it actually new or is it just a copy of the original?
Danny?
We don't get a new Form 9 every year. What they do is they sign the map that confirms that these are their active voluntary agreements.
Because it requires a signature by both parties, and that's what I was curious about.
I misspoke. No. It's not a Form 9 per se. It's a confirmation from them that is something that they're continuing to claim.
And as far as the timeline,
do you think? And I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to try to hold it to it, but not necessarily. And we'll have this information by our next actual meeting.
We'll try. I have to be honest with you. Danny is the person that handles all the requests for information.
She doesn't have anything to do.
She has Frank that helps, and Frank is also busy with many other things, including maintaining our GIS. And Danny has a whole long list of requests for information. I asked her to bring her clipboard with a request for information to show you. And if you'd indulge me for a minute, those are the requests for information that Danny has. So I don't want to generate an expectation that won't be met. If we can make it by next month, I'd be very happy. I can't promise that, but we'll try for that.
Okay. Well, at least it won't be 2 years, Gene. I'd like to make a comment to all of our members, and that is Peter and I had a chance to talk over the phone and in person, and he's requesting something that, that causes and brings about credibility. It brings it even better that a question has been asked. And have you ever found yourself in a situation where, Jeff, I asked you that question. No, I never heard that question. Peter wants a written document of information that's requested. So if, in fact, something crosses your mind, all board members, anything that crosses your mind, and you plan to put it in writing to our general manager, please CC the chairman so I can follow through with Tracy or I can follow through with Jeff Pearson, my vice. And this way, there's an accountability. Nobody says, well, I don't remember. It's in writing. I applaud you for that action.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have a form that's on the website. It's a request for information form. It's a PDF that you can fill out on the computer. If not, if it's cumbersome for you, we'll work with you to help you fill it out and ask for the information you want. Because it helps us as much as it helps you.
And again, please give me heads up. Or your vice chair, so especially if it's bad about me, send it to Jeff. Okay, let's move on. Gene, any more on that?
No.
Old business, we have two items, one that's on the agenda, one that isn't. Letter transmitting water quality sampling results to well owners. Tracy?
Thank you. You have a copy, I believe, in front of you. Mr. Durrington, do you have a copy?
Yeah.
This is the letter that the AgPool directed me to develop a draft of and then work with Watermaster and Watermaster Council. This has gone through review at all levels of Watermaster and Watermaster Council and is ready for your approval. As you will note, this is not a complete letter. The addressees have to be filled out. The water quality information has to be filled out. And, of course, the signatures on the back by Mr. Kavunas and Mr. Feenstra. But provided you have approval, it will go out as soon as I presume Danny's clipboard is cleared of her other responsibilities.
Tracy, do you want action on this today?
It's to the chair's
discretion.
Absolutely.
Okay. Questions?
It's ready to go.
Questions or comments on this draft?
I think it's a good draft, and I think you should direct Tracy to move forward with it.
Any other comments? Rob? John?
I just have one kind of a grammatical one. In the first paragraph, it says that the sampling results are going to be attached to this letter. And just above the bold, where in the state federal drinking water standards, it says copy of the results are going to be attached to this letter. Are we just making sure that they know a copy is going to be attached?
Okay, so that's the attached to this letter in the first paragraph is actually going to be removed. That's just a placeholder so that we remind ourselves we need to attach it. And then we actually inform the reader and the subsequent.
Nathan? Glenn?
Yeah, is this going to everybody on the site or just the owners?
This is going to the address on file from Watermaster.
That's the owners and maybe the tenant, if they're on file?
Just the owners.
That was our intention, Glenn.
I know it was, and I think it's poor, but I think it should go to everybody on the place. but that's what I've been saying for years.
That's hard to find.
How do you feel if somebody gets sick and dies just because he didn't get a notice because the owner didn't tell him?
At the end of the day, I would guess, I'm not an attorney, but at the end of the day, I think the owner is responsible. The responsible party that you would go for the deep pockets.
Without getting too much on the record at this point, I would advise that this first step is a very significant one that is being taken, and that there perhaps might be reasonable and appropriate follow-up steps, but this is a very important first step to notify all of the well owners that there is a problem with their well, and I believe that after we receive any and all input, we'll bring it back to the pool for further direction.
Well, I noticed that notice 65 or whatever it is they published in the papers for
Proposition 65 warning. Yeah. Yes,
that's everybody they're telling. You put it in the papers, tell everybody there's something wrong. Maybe
let's just take this as a good start. Gene, Lynn, do you have any questions?
No, I'm sorry.
Gene,
no.
Hearing your positive thoughts, I think we'll so order that we take this significant first step. This discussion will be ongoing. We have concerns about water that is or should be served in the agricultural area, Peter. So this first action, I want to assure Mr. Durrington, is just the first part of how we need to deal with what happened, what's happening, what needs to happen. So it's going to be so ordered. Let's go on. Glenn Durrington has asked, and missed a couple meetings. We'll forgive him for that. He's asked that we consider giving a time perfect for closed-door sessions, executive sessions, confidential sessions be limited in time. Now is the time if you want to make a comment or if action is needed. He wants to limit the time of the executive committee meeting.
Do we need a proposition now?
This is your time to, you're making a request, and we certainly want to give you the time you would like to discuss it.
Well, we waste too much time, and most of the time it's things we've talked about over and over for 10 years. And I think 45 minutes is plenty long enough for a confidential session, plus an option maybe if you're on the same subject, you could extend it for 15 minutes. But don't start anything else. Ask for 15 minutes and start something else. I think 45 minutes is plenty of time for any closed-door sessions. We waste a lot of time going over and over the same things at each meeting, and oftentimes over the same things from the previous meetings. So I see nothing wrong with that.
Now is the time for committee to share any thoughts or concerns or actions before I give mine.
I believe Glenn has got a good point in the brevity of our discussions, but one of the things I would hate to have a limitation on is 1 hour on a critical issue that we cannot take in closed session and discuss and come to a conclusion on. I think maybe what we all need to do as members of the ag pool is understand that our time is very valuable and not belabor issues, but make constructive comments, criticisms, and go from there.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other comment? I've known Glenn a long time, and he certainly has his thoughts as to time that can be wasted and discussions and going over it and going over it. Again, I share Jeff's concern, and that is any time that there could be time needed to get through major issues, and we're going to be watching a clock. I don't think would serve this board or any of the other committees or the board of the Water Master well. So with that, if someone wants to take action today, you're certainly welcome, and I'll do that. Or I will do my best, Mr. Durrington, to watch the discussion and try to keep the discussion short. Glenn?
I'm just going to suggest the same thing. I think, there's no question sometime we could move along a little faster. And but by the same thing, I would hate to put a limit on it. But you know, we can instruct the chairman, and it's part of the chairman's job to keep the discussion moving. And
you know, cut you off.
Yeah, if we keep beating a dead horse, you tell us to go on.
Yeah.
You know?
See, we've discussed it already too long. So, is there any action that the committee wants to take today? We've discussed this well long enough. Glenn's made himself really clear, and with a good reason.
Well, can I just make one more comment?
Of course.
Actually, Bob, you're the one that drags them off. Your comments between everybody that says something, you've got another comment about the same thing, which we already know about. I mean, you're actually the one that takes so long.
I appreciate those comments. I appreciate those comments, and I'll do better. However, you're welcome to take over the chair anytime you want. And then maybe...
Is that an honest statement? We can get through a meeting unheard.
No, I take it very personal, and I'll do my best.
Okay.
And I really appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chairman, let's move forward, please.
Let's go to the next item. Legal counsel, are you playing attorney today, Mr. Kavunas?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, Brad Harima is at a trial and has asked me to give his report.
Please.
On his behalf. So,
at a trial or on trial?
He's at a trial. So I would ask you to imagine me being a lot more eloquent, a lot younger, and a lot more handsome.
You don't have a pointy hat.
Pretend I'm Brad.
Pointy hat?
So, in January, we mentioned to you that we had filed a report with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We, pursuant to the requirements of the max benefit obligations, we had to update the hydraulic control monitoring plan. The plan that we submitted included a finding as to the volume of pumping that would be necessary in the Chino Creek wellfield to achieve hydraulic control. Specifically, the plan that we submitted found that a volume of pumping that was less than the full volume of the Chino Creek wellfield as constructed would achieve the de minimis level of discharge required by the basin plan amendment. And the difference in pumping volume required and the pumping ability of the Chino Creek wellfield is more than the pumping volume of well 18, meaning you don't need the production as much as well 18 could produce is not necessary to achieve hydraulic control on the west end of the basin. The regional board has indicated to us that the plan will be considered for approval in March or April of this year. At the time when the pool met in January, we weren't sure that we would get a separate letter from the board regarding this evaluation, but we got a letter on January 23rd, and they described that they would evaluate hydraulic control consistent with a monitoring plan that we submitted, and that full Chino Creek wellfield pumping is not necessary, and specifically the volume of pumping that is not required exceeds the capacity of well 18. So the letter is available. It's in the back of the room if you'd like to have a copy. And we're at this point communicating with the CDA, and we're waiting for them to see how this determination will affect the request that they made of Watermaster. And if you recall, the CDA asked Watermaster Board to take action against the San Bernardino County. So in light of the finding that production equal to or more than well 18 production is not needed, the CDA may be reconsidering that.
I've got a question. The well 18 was paid for, put in place, fully operational.
Yes.
It is contaminated, and we've proven that 18 is not required for basin management, but there are damages that have been incurred if they shut it down, cost of operation. So CDA would most likely look for some type of compensation, if that is the case, that they would shut it down.
Possibly.
We don't know. But,
we don't know.
But that is an open issue right now with CDA, since we no longer need it for basin management, but CDA projected that into their well fields as a production well. And now there's an issue, so...
Jeffrey.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate, given the way the agenda is constructed, that Peter needs to report on the CDA request at this moment in this meeting. in his report, he's going to talk about hydraulic control, and these are related. Because the reason we had to ask the regional board whether we could not use pump well 18 is because we told the regional board we were going to produce a certain amount of water in that location, and well 18 was part of the production volume from that location. Well 18's impacted by this Chino Airport plume, so the CDA would like to not pump from L18 because they'd like to not have those pollutants in their desalter plant and have to deal with them. So they're asking us, can we basically not use well 18? And it raises all kinds of questions. The one you raised is actually, you know, they asked us, and they asked the regional board not to use it. So, you know, we had told them they needed to, and we said, okay, we'll ask the regional board. But there's been some significant changes in this whole project that I really wasn't aware of until just recently. And I'm going to update you guys, if we can get to it on the agenda, what I've learned. Because, and I want to first of all say, and I'll say more when we get to that, but there's no ill intent by anybody here, okay? You make decisions based on the best information you have at the time, and then you get into stuff, and stuff changes. And there's been some fundamental changes that have taken place over the last 6 years in our knowledge of this whole hydraulic control thing. So we created this whole elaborate program based on one understanding of the basin. And as we got into implementing it, we found out that a number of our key assumptions were incorrect. This well 18 is a small part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other question really, I think, which is much more crucial, and I don't know whether this is the right place to talk about it, is well 18, I mean, that we found a way essentially to not get to limit the impact of the CDA of pumping that bad water. What are we going to do about the bad water? Is it our job to do anything about the bad water? Can we just leave it there? Somebody got to clean it up? I mean, those are bigger questions. Mm-hmm. And we're not the primary agency responsible for that, and yet water quality is part of our responsibility. So those are bigger questions. It's not just an ag pool issue. It's for the whole broader Watermaster family.
And that's where I was trying to go to. I was looking at...
And actually paying for 18, and you know, they got some cost, right? They spent whatever they spent drilling it, putting equipping it, plumbing it. Good luck trying to get the rest of the Watermaster family to pay for that.
Jeff, you'll go into that in greater detail when we call you up on that part of the agenda. Is that okay, Jeff?
Yeah, I was looking at trying to build up to an overall exposure in multiple areas, and that, you know, Jeff, now that Jeff's going to talk about this, then we can discuss.
Be very helpful and better for us to understand. Peter?
Mr. Chairman, continuing with legal counsel report, the second item is an update on the resolution discussion for the City of Fontana and the motion that the city made. We described last month to you that City of Fontana filed a claim that the Section 5 of the Recharge Master Plan update was incomplete and it needed to include an additional sentence in order to be complete. So Watermaster and the city stipulated that if we could agree that the other sections of the Recharge Master Plan were fine, then we could hold a series of facilitated discussions that might reach some resolution for Section 5 and the city's claim, which, as you probably know, centers around Vulcan Pit and that project and who gets credit if the project gets built.
Zero.
We had a number of discussions with them. We've had, Watermaster has facilitated four discussions between the appropriative pool and the City of Fontana. And at the end of the last meeting was on February 4th. We had a meeting scheduled for February 11th, and the city indicated before we got there on the 10th, they indicated that based on the proposal they had received from the appropriative pool, the city did not feel the meeting would be productive. So they asked for the meeting to get canceled. And so at this point, we're proceeding with the schedule as originally set in the stipulation, which is to brief the court for a court hearing on April 4th of 2014. And so the schedule is, the hearing is on April 4th, briefing is On February 28th is the deadline for Watermaster and or the City of Fontana to supplement their prior motion. March 14th is a deadline for oppositions to the motions, not just by Watermaster or Fontana, but from any other party that may choose to do so. And March 24th is the deadline for any replies to any opposition. All that's spelled out in the stipulation. The stipulation, like every other legal document, is on our website.
Okay.
Can be found there.
Peter, recommendation on SB 751?
Mr. Chairman, that is a recommendation that is... I forgot to mention the City of Fontana matter. The city sent a letter to Watermaster, which is available on the back table should you choose to want a copy. On recommendations to the board regarding SB 751, Brownstein wrote a memo, which is also available at the back. And in looking at Senate Bill 751, it amends the Brown Act to require that the reporting of voting on actions taken should include enough detail as to the vote or abstention to, on each member participating in a legislative body. And the motivation in this legislation is to prevent large agency bodies from obscuring the votes of individual members by only reporting the votes as blocks. Brownstein looked at Watermaster rules and regulations that provide that Watermaster will generally act in accord with the Brown Act unless the rules provide otherwise. The rules and regulations do not contain any provision that is inconsistent with Senate Bill 751 requirements. So Brownstein will be recommending to the board to conduct its meetings consistent with that requirement. The pools have their own rules and regulations, and if you also wish to comply, we'll work with you to help you modify the current procedure just a little bit to make it consistent.
So basically what they're saying is every vote is a roll call vote?
That's one interpretation. You could do it a little simpler than that. For example, if you have in the board, you have 9 votes. If it's a 7-2 vote, all you have to do is identify who was the no.
Okay.
And that just speed things up a little bit. Part of what we're asking for, which is to enter the name of a person making a motion and seconding a motion, having that as part of the recording is also part of the same effort to understand and record properly for anybody listening. It's all part of the same effort to be as transparent as possible.
Thank you, Peter. Any questions or comments? Hearing none.
So the volume vote at advisory would be noted as per all of the individual voting amounts and individuals. So
if the advisory chooses to follow Senate Bill 751 requirements,
okay.
What we would do, we have a sign-in that gets translated into an attendance at the minutes. So the intent is to educate the public who voted which way. And so if the advisory has a vote, and let's say there's, for example, 20 people on the advisory committee, if it's a 19-1 vote, by identifying who was the one that voted no or who was the one or two that abstained, between that and the attendance, you know who was there and how they voted.
But yeah, I was just looking at how this would transact in the if it was called by somebody to do a volume vote, then you know, you'd identify the volume and the individual.
Yeah, if you're doing a volume vote, that's the advisory committees or the appropriate pools equivalent of a roll call, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you already have that there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any additional questions of Peter? If none, we'll move on. The CFO report, Joe did an outstanding job on the mid-year review. I don't know what more he could tell us. I think we can bypass this. Unless any member has a question of Joe at this time. Hearing none, let's move on. Let's get to the GM's report.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is reporting on a few items that I think the pool should remain current on. One is a safe yield recalculation standing report item each month. The appropriative pool sent a letter in January to Watermaster, and they asked for a couple things. One of the things they asked for is for interaction of the pool's technical consultants with Wildermuth Environmental, so that the pool's technical consultants could become more familiar with the model. So we hosted a meeting on January 30 of 2014 and had a discussion. Of course, the meeting is open to everyone. It was a particular emphasis on the technical folks, and we had technical folks actually from not only the appropriative pool, but also the ag pool had people there. And we have scheduled the second meeting. The announcement is going out soon. The second meeting will be March 3rd to continue the discussion that they started. At the same time, after the first meeting on January 30, some of the technical consultants asked for additional data. That's been gathered and it's been posted on the FTP site, so it's available for people to review prior to the March 3rd meeting. The appropriative pool asked also on their January 13th letter, they asked for consideration of a different base period that would be used in the analysis for a recalculated safe yield, and also the baseline that would be used for estimating the new yield generated by the Santa Ana River underflow. And so Watermaster had originally asked the pool via letter to give us their suggestions on those two topics by February 20. That would have been coming up shortly. In light of the fact that we had to move the second meeting of the technical folks to March 3rd, we're also going to tell the appropriative pool that we're going to wait for the suggestions until after the second technical meeting, so that they have a chance to rely on as good information as they can. So we'll wait for that. Presumably we'll get their specific suggestions on what base period to use. We'll run the analysis and come back to them with what the recalculated safe yield would be under their suggested base period. We're continuing to work toward dispatching what we believe is Watermaster's obligation. And at the same time, we're working as much as we can with all the parties to help them understand and eventually make a decision that is broadly supported within the parties of the judgment. That's my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Any questions or comments? Jeff, I'm going to...
If I could have Peter report on hydraulic control, and then I'd like to do a little chalk talk on both of these items kind of together.
Okay. Members of the committee, I discussed this with Jeff. He has done some outstanding work, put a lot of time and effort into what we're going to discuss, so I want to give him the time needed to explain to us so we better understand what's taking place. Peter?
On hydraulic control, Mr. Chairman and members of the pool, as Jeff alluded to, there was the understanding that there was more water flowing from, if you will, from north to south on the west end of the basin. So much so that it was thought that the Chino Creek well field needed to produce between 5 and 7, approximately maybe up to 7,700 acre feet a year in order to stop water flowing south and going into Prado and eventually leaving the basin. After the wells were drilled in the Chino Creek well field, the geology specifically in that area was understood far better, and the understanding was that there was much less water flowing through there, and consequently the wells could produce much less water. So we got into the analysis of what does it take to, given the reduced capacity of the Chino Creek well field, what does it take to get hydraulic control? We had the exchange with the regional board I described earlier. And so where we are now is that the regional board seems to agree that if we pump the Chino Creek well field at 1,500 acre feet a year, we will have hydraulic control on the west end of the basin, having already achieved it on the east side of the basin. So from Watermaster's point of view, we are now moving toward determining if water that's held in storage should be still subjected to the 2% loss, if that loss should be less than 2%, and if so, what that would be. We'll move forward and we'll continue to report on that as we have more information coming up.
Thank you, Peter. Jeff?
Bob, if I could just...
Please, we provided this for you and...
I appreciate very much.
Move it up so we can all see it.
The opportunity. What Peter just said, I knew because I talked to Peter recently, but I was unaware of kind of these fundamental changes that have taken place over the last number of years. And so since I was unaware, my guess is you guys are also unaware because... there's been some significant changes.
I'm sorry, is there a microphone that's picking you up, or
probably
should we
not.
Move you over what? To that mic, or move that mic to you?
Well, I got to be able to draw. And
why don't you just raise your voice, Jeff?
You probably want it on the recording.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
All right, forgive my drawing, but I think it's just much easier to understand this. That's sort of the Chino Basin, okay? And here's the river, okay? east side, west side. All right, let's talk about hydraulic control. And here's where some things get kind of interesting. We developed this, Mark Willimuth introduced, and we as a family embraced this whole concept of hydraulic control. What are we trying to control? Hydraulic water. We're trying to control water leaking into the river. That's hydraulic control. Our idea was to essentially create a well field here that would keep water from spilling from the Chino Basin into the river. Why'd that matter? Because the salt has tended to migrate south, and you got bad water down here, salty water, and when it spills into the river, it degrades the river. And so, given the anti-degradation standards of the water quality laws of the state of California, we don't have the right to degrade the river. And so, there were basin objectives. The regional board regulated our activities in the Chino Basin with the purpose of trying to limit the amount of salt that would leak out of the basin into the Santa Ana River, because downstream, of course, the Santa Ana River is Orange County's drinking water supply. So the idea of hydraulic control was to get control of the Chino Basin, thereby reducing our leakage into the river to quote-unquote de minimis levels. And if we could do that, if we could achieve hydraulic control, then the regional board would give us permission to operate up here in a much more aggressive fashion particularly with our sewage water, our reclaimed water, which has higher salt loads. So it gave, and in order to get the regional board to give us that permission, we had to utilize a part of the law, which I believe Chino Basin was the first area of the state to ever come up with a plan to use this, which is called maximum benefit. Okay, and that was a regulatory standard. So we made a pitch to the regional board that if we obtained hydraulic control, then we could operate the Chino Basin to a maximum benefit standard as opposed to an anti-degradation standard. And there were huge benefits in terms of being able to use this reclaimed water much more aggressively and recycle it. So there were a lot of benefits to doing that. Now, Willimuth told us, based on the modeling that he did in the early 2000s, was that we needed to dewater a substantial part of the basin down here in order to, essentially, the barrier that was going to be created between the Chino Basin and the river was going to be created by dewatering the bottom part of the basin and creating, the gravity flow so that water would, you know, come back in from the river, or at least not leak out of the basin. And his calculation was that we needed 400,000 acre feet of mining in order, we had to essentially dewater by 400,000 acre feet the basin in order to obtain this hydraulic control. Now, at the same time, it was an estimated that we would need 40,000 acre feet per year of pumping to replace. This is where agriculture had the last place agriculture had been, and as agriculture was becoming reduced because of urbanization, we needed to replace that much agriculture pumping with urban pumping in order to maintain this dewatering and maintain hydraulic control. A little bit of history where the ag pool played. Willimuth's first cut at hydraulic control early in the Peace II negotiations, he was projecting that we would need maybe 650,000 acre feet of overdraft. And there was huge resistance to such a large number of overdraft, because remember, the whole purpose of Watermaster is to enforce a management structure in the Chino Basin that is sustainable, That is, no generation, really the basic ethic is no generation has the right to mine water out of the Chino Basin. We have to leave the Chino Basin to the next generation full, whatever full means. And so there was a lot of resistance to 650, and we settled on, well, what would it take? And Willamette's model said about 400,000 of overdraft, controlled overdraft. And so that, of course, is a tremendous financial asset because it gives you the right to draw 400,000 that doesn't have to be replenished. And so we allocated the 400,000 to desalter replenishment, which were the facilities that were going to make up the 40,000. And then, but the 400,000 was predicated on wells being placed in a defined geographical location. And there's an exhibit in the peace documents that has a red line on a map, and that's a box. And the production had to be in the box. Furthermore, on a split on the 400,000, we knew that, I mean, what we were told at that time was that where we were leaking, because this area over here on the east side, and it took me a long time to figure this out, how in the world can we be leaking and then inducing? And it turns out that the geological properties of the Chino Basin allow water from the river to enter the Chino Basin, while at the same time water is leaking from the Chino Basin. And this was where Wilderness Modeling said we did not have hydraulic control. And so the thought was, all right, if we're going to go mine 400,000, you have to produce a certain amount of it over here where there's actual leaking. Because where they really kind of wanted to put it was over here, because they already had pumps, they already had a plant, they already had pipelines. It was less expensive than coming over here. This part here, this is Chino Creek, is the name of this here, and it's called the Chino Creek Wellfield. And up until the last week or two, I had not realized that we were supposed to pump. In order for the expansion of the desalter program to be eligible for a significant portion, I think it's 175,000 of this 400,000, the rules say they have to produce half of the desalter expansion from this Chino Creek wellfield. So that was somewhere between 5,000 and 7,700 acre feet a year. And you just heard Peter say they're going to do 1,500. And I guess, you know, question that comes up in my mind is that really accurate? Do we really need to derot water by 400,000? And if we really, okay, another question that's being raised is, and this is raised in the regional board letter that's right there. Regional board letter takes the existing desalter program. What we got built right now is right around 30,000 acre feet a year of desalting capacity. That's what's built right now. We're going to add 1,500 over here. So we got, let's say, 32,000 acre feet. And the regional board says, well, you told us you were going to do 40. Now, I think they may still plan on doing 40. But where I've seen the well locations to do the additional 8 are outside the box, big box, and they're certainly not over here in Chino Creek Wellfield. So I think there's some tough questions that need to be asked about, you know, are we going to go to 40,000? I mean, the regional board, and then you have the financial arrangements. They did actually, when we put this thing into motion back in 07, you know, Western and other parties had committed to buying this water. They spent millions of dollars upgrading and preparing. And so they need the production facilities to get to 40,000. Do we really need 40,000? I don't know. There's buyers for that water. That water's now become quite you know, with a rapid escalation of the value of water, you know, maybe it makes economic sense to go to 40,000. But these are questions that you know, have to flow out of when what you find out in the real world is different than what you thought you had when you started. But in order to get going, you had to assume something, and it wasn't that anybody did anything wrong. It's just you go out there and you find out that the reality is different
than assumptions.
That,
yeah,
yeah, than what you found out now. Okay, so
Jeff,
one second, please. Two questions.
You know, depression was created on the east side, so you have inflow from the river, and that was the plan. I'm not sure how much water goes in there. But now, with the west side doing that same thing, will you get an inflow from that part also? From that?
No, there's no way. I've never seen any significant inflow from the river up over here.
Okay.
But what you do is you stop the outflow. Now, the regional board letter, what they're saying is, we find that, you know, I don't know how many times I've asked Mark, what is de minimis? But we finally now have a definition of de minimis. De minimis is, according to the regional board, less than 1,000 acre feet a year of leakage to the river. Would that be right? Okay. So they've now defined de minimis.
Now that 40,000.
Let me just complete this. When we started, we found out, we thought we had 5,000 to 7,000. Turns out, apparently, we only had 2,400. I mean,
that's a concern.
I always wondered where the heck that water was, because I live out there. And I thought if there really is 5,000 to 7,000 feet leaking here, I would notice.
It'd be upwelling.
I could never find it.
That 40,000.
Now it's apparently.
Gene has a question.
Yes.
That 40,000 acre feet, that goes back to before the actual original desalter was built, and that was the number that was agreed on.
Yeah.
That there again, it just takes getting the regional board to agree for some other kind of number. Mm-hmm. But the 400,000, I hear what you're saying, but any reduction in that is going to be probably a tough sell to their appropriators because it's going to cost them money.
Well, that's
only the beginning of the tough sell because I haven't even begun to get to the next
step. One second.
Almost as bad as this one.
Mr. Pearson.
I mean, do we lose a chance of operating under the max benefit scenario?
I don't think we necessarily will lose that. I think here's the deal. The regional board, they're concerned. Remember, our job is to not mine the basin, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, our job is to maintain
protect it
as a resource.
Right.
The regional board's job is to protect the downstream water quality objectives. And if we can limit our dumping, so to speak, or our impact of the downstream uses, that's the major concern of the regional board. Then they'll let us, within reason, manage within our basin.
Our pumping.
In a more aggressive fashion that allows us to, because it meets other water goals of the state. You know, recycling is a huge, you know, goal of the state of California to utilize that water. So. And that's the purpose of that. So I don't think we're in a big amount of trouble with the regional board. I think our trouble is with ourselves because we want to be honest about what we're doing. All right, that which gets to the safe yield recalculation. In those same documents that created all of that, you know, we've been operating at 140 since the beginning of the judgment. Now, one of the things that, you know, intuitively, we might have been able to kind of think about, but until more recently, until you actually start thinking about it, you know, what made this up? It was Bud Carroll that came up with a 140. We know that agriculture's share of that 140 is 82.8. The 140 was based on a best estimation of how much water was produced during a particular period of time when there was a particular land use palette of the Chino Basin. I mean, there were certain places that were developed. There were other places that were agriculture. And ag was perceived to have produced 82.8, and that's how we got our share of the yield. One of the interesting factors, though, that I always wondered about, you might have too, is how much of this 140 came from agriculture return flows? Mm-hmm. That is, as farmers water their land, a certain amount of that water goes back into the aquifer. Right. And essentially, you're pumping it twice in the same year. Well, as agriculture diminishes, almost has to be that ag return flows diminish. Mm-hmm. Now, how does ag treat water differently than if that water is used by an urban use? Well, when the urban folks use water, it goes into the sewer. And when it goes into the sewer, it goes to the sewer plant. And it may, some of that flow may get turned into recycled water, but then it gets a credit, an acre foot of credit. So intuitively, you'd have to say, you know, if 82.8 out of the 140 was ag, and we don't have the same return flows, maybe there's a problem with 140. But, you know, we got lots of problems in the Chino Basin, and we just didn't want to touch that one. So we kind of left it all aside. We launched off on piece one, piece two, the OBMP. We spent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on monitoring. Actually going out there, building this model, this phenomenal model that Wildermuth has constructed for us. And we kicked the ball down the road and said, okay, in 2000, whatever it was, 10 with the Peter that we were supposed to, or 2011, we're gonna do a safe yield recalculation.
11, yeah.
In 2011, after we put all this information together. So that's what we're doing. We're obviously a couple years late, but we got the data. We defined the period of time. What is it, 2000 to 2010 is the period of time?
2001 through 10.
2001 through 2010. That's the period of time. Okay, so back in the early 2000s, we said, okay, we're going to do the safe field recalculation in 2010. We're going to define the period of time that we're looking for is 2001 to 2010, and then we're going to go do the safe field recalculation. All right, so that's what we've been doing. Staff, Wildermuth, all our consultants, they all came up with this. And their best estimate is that the safe yield during this period of time was 130,000 acre feet. Now that was a shock to me. I think it was a shock to a lot of people. Maybe it shouldn't have been a shock, but it was. Now, the 140 is something we need to keep in mind too. While we've operated at 140, but we built a bunch of recharge. We spent $40 million in the early 2000s on a recharge improvement plan. And that recharge improvement, it was $20 million that was paid for by the local agencies, $20 million that came from grants. And Wildermuth had estimated that those projects would yield 12,000, originally 12,000 acre feet a year. You remember back to those times, we questioned that 12,000, and we made a big stink about it in the ag pool.
Yeah.
And so what they promised us was, first of all, they wouldn't start taking the 12,000 until they actually built the projects.
Yeah.
And then they'd say, we'd true it up after 5 years, and whatever we didn't get, we'd fix in the next 5. And so it turned out that those projects probably yielded only about 6,000. So they've taken 12 for the first 5, and they've been taking none for the last 5 to average out 6. But in essence, that water has been going into storage accounts for pumping. It's been assigned to an appropriator. So instead of 140, you've really been operating at 146. Now, there's also one other component. This is really yet to be determined. Desalters started production about 2002. And Wildermuth has calculated that half of the desalter production is basically about half of the volume that you produce out of the desalters will be induced into the Chino Basin from the river. There is a working assumption that half does not have to be replenished. Remember, everybody who pumps water in a Chino Basin, every acre foot has to be accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
If it's produced, it has to be, you either have to have a right or you have to replenish it. So the desalter comes online, it doesn't have a water right. It has to be replenished. And the assumption is that half of the desalter production is induced from the river, so that's essentially new yield. And so only the other half has to be replenished. So the other half has been replenished out of these, stored by these accounts, and there's a hierarchy of these accounts, including the 400,000 that's been debited. But this other half is production that's not been replenished, and we haven't really allocated it yet. But potentially, it could inflate this even more if we do allocate it by another 10,000 acre feet, more or less. So, in effect, the salters are actually producing. We're allocating out about 156,000 acre feet, and in reality, we really only have about 130. That 130 is what the model tells us the basin will give you since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not a small amount. If, in fact, we are overdrafting in excess of the 400,000 of authorized and in excess of the 200,000 that was originally allocated when the judgment was entered into. When the judgment was entered into in 1977, the court allowed 5,000 acre feet of overdraft per year for 40 years to help ease the financial impact of the adjudication. So that was 200,000 of authorized. We authorized another 400,000 in the hydraulic control plan. In excess of that, in reality, 26,000 per year times 13 years. You're looking at a fairly significant amount of overdraft. What are you going to do about that?
Jeff.
I think that's an open question.
Yes, it is.
Is it real, and are we going to do anything?
I think you make, you know, a real good argument there. My question is, for that 400,000 acre foot overdraft, how much of that has already been pumped?
Well, it's difficult to know how much is pumped, because let me finish, because that's the last.
Where we're all going is you could take this off of that. And then,
well, right.
You could, accept that that's been.
That's right.
Now, here's what's happened. Remember all the things that we've been doing over the last 10 years, okay, to generate water right. So first of all, we got 26,000 here. You got all these ag conversions, okay? We transferred over early the water, and we've transferred it over to entities that haven't necessarily pumped it. We've had voluntary transfers. So we've managed to take a reclaimed water supply and turn it into water right. And that's been some more water. And what's really happened, and Danny will know the exact number, but there is in the range of about 400,000 acre feet. How far off am I in storage?
I don't know the exact number off the top of my head.
It's in the range.
I bet you it's close.
It's in the range. Acre feet. Now, this is water that's in Chino, Ontario, Upland, it's in their accounts. They believe, and they're right, that they have the right to pump this water. What if they all did? Okay, so what this points out to you and pointed out to me, and I'm sharing with you, is these are kind of big issues. Now, they got solutions. The problem is that the solutions hit different people in different ways. What have these entities done with the stored water? Have they capitalized on it? Have they put a dollar value on it, put it under balance sheet?
Of course.
What have they done with it?
They've transferred some of it.
They're selling some of it. So you have not ag, but you have the stored water. You've got this here. you know, you got a variety of challenges that we're going to have to work our way through. So as I see it, there's really two, on the safe fuel recalculation, there's really two issues. There's, what do you do, you know, 26 times 13 years, and it may be more, but just
338,000.
Okay, this is kind of legacy overdraft.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with that? Do we have a responsibility to future generations to go make that right?
So you're saying we could be printing water.
Mm-hmm. We are printing water.
Absolutely are.
Okay, so this is legacy. Then the question is, all right, I mean, what do we do on a go-forward basis? And is there a strategy where you do both with, you know, do we set the safe yield at something less? And then you also, I mean, and this is more of an intramural issue than it is a big picture issue. But of this 130, the way the documents are written, if you got desalter production of 40, you know, 35 to 40,000, and there's an anomaly or a strange situation where the base period, this particular base period that was picked, the amount of inflow from the river was greatly reduced because we had a period of time where actually we were not bringing very much water in the river because ag's production had accelerated and we hadn't really picked up on the production by desalter. It just so happens that during this base period was that period of time. The way the document reads is that it picks a date and says all the Santa Ana River underflow that comes in excess of what you're getting on that day is new yield. And it turns out that some part of this 130, actually a fair amount of it, 15,000 maybe acre feet, potentially, could be considered new yield. Now, it's treated differently because it's supposed to go to desalter replenishment. So this 130 could end up being, its effect on the operating safe yield could be substantially larger. It could be as low as 113. Is that what we're looking at? 113. Could be as low as 113. So if you're Chino, you're Pomona, you're Upland, and you've been operating at 140 plus your share of this recharge project, and you got to now recalculate all your plans and take your hit down to 113, and that's why the appropriators are so concerned because, you know, this is a much larger change than they ever anticipated, and it has huge financial
tremendous cost
for them in terms of their planning. Now they're sitting on a, you know, somebody's sitting on a very large pool of stored water, but that's not, you know, and you know, I don't know that from the ag pool, it's really the appropriators are going to have to. This is an inter appropriator problem, mm-hmm. and they got to figure out how to sort it out. But I do think from the ag pool standpoint, we've always kind of viewed ourselves as the guardian of the basin, mm-hmm. insisting that no generation has the right to take something from the following generation. And we made a very knowledgeable decision that we could justify and control overdraft because the benefits of hydraulic control and maximum benefit were great enough for the public to justify that level of mining. And we knew that, I mean, right in those documents, we knew that overdrafting by 400,000 was going to draw well levels down. And, you know, it has. And so, therefore, the appropriate pool wells will have to be, they'll have to pump from lower levels. But we accepted that as acceptable, given the benefits of the overall program. And I think that's still our job, you know, to maintain the values, the public values, in the Chino Basin.
So, Jeff, how many acres in this basin?
I don't know.
A lot.
Oh, I mean, you know, is that 400,000 a foot lower elevation?
I'll tell you when it's always dangerous going from memory, but when they introduced, I was always quite surprised because the original hydraulic control of 650, and which got ratcheted down to 400. You had, you know, Rancho and Coquitlam County Water District and some of those, particularly in that, who, you know, Wildermuth predicted their wells were going to drop 50, 60 feet. And they were fine with that.
Yeah,
didn't bother. I could never understand why they were fine with that. But they said, we know it'll cost us a little bit more to pump it up, but the benefits outweigh the cost.
Well, that wasn't my call. That was their call. Mm-hmm. All my concern was is, I mean, and the reason we settled on the 450 or the 400 was, that's what Wilderness said we needed to take out of the basin in order to obtain hydraulic control. That's why I was willing to support it. And I guess my question, you know, is it really 400,000?
So over
can we really go back?
So okay. Over 2001 to 2010, what have been the elevation drops in the well from the static?
Well, those are in Atlas reports, and you got to remember it's a little, you got to tease it out because, you know, not everybody's pumping all their water, and we've accumulated a lot of water in storage, so that water is still sitting there. So yeah.
A lot of paper transfers.
Yeah, you think it is.
Yeah. Well, we think it is because they own it.
Right.
They own 400 of whatever is there.
Well, you know, when Peter first rolled this thing out in July or August, whenever you had that first, the thing that, you know, I really reacted negatively. I wasn't alone. But yeah. It was so different than what, I mean, it was such a massive change from what we had kind of thought.
Mm-hmm.
What was happening? So the first thing you do is go, you know, is Wildermuth right? And so it's taken me quite a process to kind of come to grips with all of that.
The big problem is we can't double dip. Eventually, double dipping is going to get us into a lot of trouble.
You can double dip. You can triple dip. You can
up until the time there's no more water left.
But I think this is where, I mean, this is where it's going to be a test of self-government, right? I mean, can we demonstrate the discipline? It's always easy to allocate benefits.
Yeah.
How do we allocate pain? Okay. In an equitable fashion and try to do it so that it's manageable for everybody, because I don't think it's in any of our interest to devastate anybody. I mean, this is not a punitive thing, but we got to come to grips with it.
Well, it may be. You ran up a couple months ago, Jeff, a yellow flag, and you talked to me on the phone. I'm going, all right, but this is not going to be popular, friend.
But
so you know what? You're not this subject, this concern, Gene.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, you had that 10-year period. Evidently, the appropriators would like to use a different base period.
Of course.
And the only reason I can see that they want to do that, evidently the numbers don't look as bad if you use a different base period.
That's true, and Peter can comment too. My understanding is that even best case on a different base period, you take the 130 maybe to 133, 34. I mean, it's by blending it out over, say, 20-year period of time as opposed to a 10-year period of time. Not a huge game.
Well, but you know, it's been my experience with, you know, public issues and everything, where when you're looking at significant costs like these, and you know, I look at us a little different than what you do, but I think we're the conscience of the basin here, because the money wise, we don't make any money, we don't lose any money, so we can afford, and we're the only ones that can afford to act that way. And what I've always seen in the public area is that when it comes to, you know, very negative things that cost money, the attitude is, well, let's push it off a number of years because then I'll be retired and they'll blame it on somebody else. And I've actually, one time at Met, in a public meeting, we were going to raise rates, and one board member in a public session said, we can't do that. I'm up for election next year. You know, and that's what you're going to fight. Now, what does Wilderness think of your numbers?
Well, I mean,
we're going to see.
Mark would say what Danny said.
Yes.
I don't have the exact numbers.
Jeff, we're going
to. But for our purposes here, I'd like to give Peter a chance, because if there's something here that I'm off, I'd like you to correct it while we still got everybody's attention. Because this is what I've learned over the last few weeks. If I'm wrong, please.
None of your observations strike me as inappropriate observations. I think the total amount of water in storage, at a quick look, my numbers go back, they're 2.5 years old, is a little bit less than 400,000. But the point is still the same. There's been There's been decline in storage beyond what was approved, and there's been accumulation in stored water accounts, which both are opposite of what.
They're
additive in a bad way. So one thing I would like to say is the appropriative pool is saying we'd like to consider a different base period. And I don't disagree with them that it would actually give a little more realistic perspective on what can be pumped safely. And the connection there is that if you look, well, let me try to do it just by waving hands, okay? If you use, say, the next 10 years as a base period, 2011 through 20 instead of 01 through 10, what's more realistic is the production of the CDA. Mm-hmm. And if the production of the CDA is more realistic, it's a bit of a projection by the model, but the model would project you will draw more from the river. And that is, in fact, what will most likely happen. So I don't disagree that using a base period that matches your reality the best way possible is a good thing to do. I think it's a good thing to do.
Thank you.
At the same time, Watermaster and Jeff and Paul and Bob, as a Watermaster board, that have an obligation and a duty, irrespective of everybody else, they have an obligation and a duty to recalculate the safe yield based on 2001 through 2010 as the base period. It is pretty much explicit like that. So they need to be given strong advice by the pools to do something different. And that's what we're trying to help the pools come up with and give that strong advice in a way that's well-educated and meaningful for everyone.
Well, but basically what you're saying is, you know, as far as the CDA, you're just looking at the amount of the water that comes in from the river back into the basin,
yes.
Which in the whole scheme of things is not a whole lot of the whole total.
Right.
It would be a little so bit it more. Doesn't skew these numbers that terrible much. And, you know, we talk about elevations, but let's say that 400,000 in storage is a good number just for discussion. That offsets any overpumping we do. So you would not expect to see a lot of drop in elevation. But, I mean, literally, you know, it won't happen, but they could all pump it all out tomorrow. In the next 10 years, let's say they pumped it all out. Well, then you'd have a tremendous drop in the elevation than what we expect. And, you know.
Yeah, you're compounding both what they've taken that isn't there plus the 400,000, and, you know, it's...
So the way that plays out, Director Koopman, is that if parties pump beyond their production right, the way the judgment, it's meant to be a physical solution. You can pump more than your right. You have a right to, so long as you replenish it.
Replenish it, yes.
They have a right to replenish it from storage. So let's say, hypothetically, a drought comes along.
Okay.
So...
Hypothetical,
right? So they all go to the pump, and they all pump more than their production right. Mm-hmm. And they all have a big replenishment obligation at the end of the year, and they turn to Watermaster and say, take it out of my storage account.
That's right.
Okay, and that's how it all comes to be real.
And Wildermuth at one point in the past, and I think that was before your time, and I don't know where the break point is as far as, you know, how much you pump the basin down. But if I remember correctly, there was a break point where Wildermuth says we do not have the physical capacity to put enough water in the ground to overcome it. Now, we don't, you know, and that's the best of my memory. Now, you know, if we get past that point, we kill the basin. Yeah. And we don't want to get to that. And there again, where that break point is, I don't know. But I think, you know, as an agriculturalist, and I think most of the people in here, we tend to be fairly conservative. But my problem is that when you're looking at the appropriative side, is that, you know, they aren't very conservative, and mainly because they're driven by dollars.
You know, Jeff brought up a whole bunch of different pieces and parts of a jigsaw puzzle. It would certainly be nice to try to isolate them and understand, you know, what has taken place and what is currently the program, and I have not seen it. I don't know if anybody, because Jeff, you've got this in your mind. And
well, I asked Peter for that, and I think there is some talk at the staff level about what I asked Peter was, we need a briefing on what the status of the whole desalter program, hydraulic control, the whole thing. So, you know, you start off with what we thought it was when we started.
Right.
And really, my mind hadn't really moved. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was still what we thought it was. And there's been all these developments that have taken place, but it's all inside baseball. And it's not, I mean, it's just because, it, you know, from month to month to month, it's technical stuff, and we deal with, every once in a while, there's a, you know, there's something that comes to our level, like this Well 18, you know, but we don't really, we're not watching the big picture, because...
You are.
We need a brief, well, I am now, but we need a briefing, kind of bring up everybody's knowledge level on the whole program.
Well, you know, Jeff, I think, you know, you did a tremendous job on this presentation here. And what I would like to see, basically, you've asked Peter to see if he could shoot some holes there. Because everything you said made a tremendous amount of sense to me. I would like to see this presentation somehow, some way, made to, like, the appropriator, let them shoot at it. And see if there are holes there. And if there is, that's fine. But at least this is a step in what I see as the right direction and the changes that we're going to do. And I think it's up to us to drive it.
And our responsibility, Jeff.
Yeah, Gene, I agree with you. But I think, you know, if it's a 3% deviation or a 5% deviation, we still got a problem. Absolutely. You know, it's the problem is here.
And growing.
Well, if we continue to pump at 156,000 acre feet and still maintain the storage accounts and no water is coming in from Northern California, I mean, you know, well, they're all compounding issues.
Even if you used at 140 from 1978 and it was only 130 then, you're lost 10,000 acre foot of water for years since 1978, which is a significant amount of water.
Well, that's not, well, just on that particular point, if you look at Wilderness graph, we have not, it's not been 130 all the way back to 78.
Right.
So early on, it would actually, Safefield actually went up a little bit. And, but there's a, Peter's got a very interesting graph that I'm sure will get daylighted as we all move forward in this, which shows the collective, law, you know, that it actually takes these data points and goes all the way back and tracks cumulatively how much we've overdrafted. And it's, you know, how much it is, I don't know. You know, I don't want to guess, but it's several hundred thousand acre feet that has basically accumulated and, you know, been pumped out greater than the safe yield. And you, there's ways to tease this out. I'd say the good news in all this is, because of the deadline and the requirement and Peter's seriousness with which he takes the responsibilities that he's been given by the court, we're going to deal with this issue. And what my purpose in was to help you guys and to help myself, to, you know, because this dialogue is good in terms of kind of getting our minds around this issue. And, you know, I think the appropriators, my guess is by and large, they all understand this,
they know
or some pieces of it.
Yeah.
And they're in their pool trying, you know, they have two things. We're just interested in the overall good of the basin. They're interested in the overall good of the basin too. They feed on the basin, right? I mean, they need it. But they also have to look at their own agency and the impacts of this reality on their own agency. And then, you know, truth be told, they're in competition with each other. Right, I mean, we all just love to get along. We all want to get along, but in some ways, it's zero sum game. What one person gets, the other one has to give up, and those are really, really difficult things to work your way through. But we will work our way through it. Okay, there's no hiding from this. This is going to be dealt with, and however long it takes. Will take, and it will get dealt with.
Mr. VandenHeuvel, but it will not be popular. So to end it like this, if I may, first of all, on behalf of the committee, I want to thank you for the work and for you being so tenacious to the point and calling me and said, Bob, we just got to get to the bottom of this. I think we all got an education today. I think we made some assumptions here. We have to go beyond that. And so we had a little meeting this week with Gene Koopman, Nathan DeBoom in place of Jeff, Tracy Agoscue, and myself. And Carol Pete, Larry, what was said here today, there's many years of work, effort, understanding, study that have gone into this, and unfortunately, there are some, I don't know who they are, there are some that would just prefer us to go away. And the last man standing may be the state of California, not in my lifetime. So there is a huge responsibility here on what's going on in the basin. So, Jeff, this is just the beginning. I see your hand, Paul. I'll just try to wrap this up real quick. We said, Tracy says, you know, she's in a very unfair position. We've had two, three great attorneys in front of her that have had several decades of time and effort and study in this. And so we're even talking, Jeff, I'm going to call for a workshop of our own committee to walk and work through this, because you're not going to be alone. They'd like to see Koopman go away. They'd like to see, pardon me, there are some that would like Koopman and Pearson and especially Feenstra, probably DeBoom for sure. But we're going to get into this, Jeff, and we're not going to let go of it until we have an understanding, because there's a huge responsibility here by all of us on behalf of the courts. Paul.
Just a quick question. Jeff, when you were doing this, did you think that this would affect the 2% loss that's been applied over the years in light of what's come up here?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know that axiom, when you find yourself in a hole, what's the first thing you do? Stop digging. You know, one thing we have been doing to address this, I mean, we didn't do it for that reason, but we've been taking 2% of everybody's storage account, wiping it off the book every year. Okay, we call it losses. And we did promise the appropriators, and I've been a strong advocate for it, and you know, I did not realize that this is what the state of the basin was. So it made sense that once we obtained hydraulic control, we wouldn't have any more losses. So there's a stipulation that when you reach hydraulic control, that 2% loss goes away. But, you know, so Peter mentioned that we're getting close to obtaining hydraulic control in the eyes of the regional board, and one of the rules says is that when we reach hydraulic control, the 2% debit against these storage accounts goes away. But obviously, these storage accounts have been inflated by a management strategy that overestimated the amount of water that can be produced every year on a sustainable basis. How do you reconcile the two?
Mark Oldermuth has about 30 years in this, maybe more, Peter, because I knew him when he was at Montgomery Watson, and we did our first computer model of this whole basin, okay? So we've got one of the top engineers in the country that's still working for the Water Master. We have Peter, who has a whole different attitude of how things should be addressed and how you come to conclusions and solutions. Conclusions and solutions. So I am going to think more about and work with Mr. Pearson and others that we try to maybe schedule a workshop that, Jeff, we get behind you even stronger than we are today and know that what we need to do to go in the right direction. Like I said, it's not going to be popular, but we've never been popular. With that said, is there any other old business? Otherwise, we're going to go into closed session. Peter, do you have something?
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, one thought I wanted to plug in for the pool's collective consciousness is that the concept about the appropriators and how they fit into all this, they are financially impacted by all this. They're financially impacted in a great big deal. And we're trying to be sensitive to that. And I agree 100% with what Jeff said in terms of what this impact could mean. The one thing I want to add to your consciousness is that they're not for-profit corporations. These are public agencies that serve the same public in the basin, and we're entrusted with the safekeeping of a public resource in the basin. These guys are fighting to avoid rate increases on the same public. So, you know, I was in that spot as a retailer and going to city council and asking for a rate increase. You know, I get it. I completely get it. And we're trying to find that balance of what works for the basin in a way that it works for them to help them cope with a change that's coming that was completely unanticipated. So last comment, if you'll indulge me for 30 more seconds. Using this this GM report as an update on the overlying non-ag pool available water per the judgment Exhibit G, just letting everybody know that there is water available from the non-ag pool to be transferred or purchased by the appropriative pool. We have notified everyone. Their expression of interest is due March 1. Some have already started. The letter, the form, and the notices, we've made it available to everyone. It doesn't directly affect the ag pool other than knowing that the physical solutions and the transfers are still working in the base.
Peter, allow me to just comment to you. We are wanting to work with everybody in the ag pool. We're all one family at the end of the day. At the same time, we have to be responsible, and we have to, as Jeff said, protect this basin for decades to come, and we will do it. But we'll do it in a very sensitive, positive, we should be all trying to do the right thing. With that said,
I have a comment to make.
Yes.
You know, there's 2,000 houses going to come online pretty soon out there.
Yes, sir.
And their water line is built big enough, but they've only got half enough water to fill the water line to those houses.
That's what we're told.
And then they figure there might be as many as 20,000 houses in a few years.
That's correct. By 12 more years, according to Lewis.
Yeah.
How come they don't have enough water?
They just don't have enough water.
And they're going to drill more wells.
For line.
For the line. They don't have enough.
If you look at adjudication.
Okay.
2 acre foot of water.
This will be a fun discussion at our workshop.
I just hear the rumors.
I want to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody for being here today. We're going to go into closed door. Everybody is excused. But Peter and Larry, please move up to where Jeff is sitting.
Yeah.
Paul, do it.
Okay.
Did I walk into that one? We really like you here. Hey, the action was taken by the point, by the pool.
Pool.
By the pool. That Larry, and spell your name for her.
D-I-M-O-C-K.
With the state of California will be added to this pool board membership.
As a voting member.
As a voting member. As of today. All the others stay in line. You have 3 alternates, Carol, that you can draw on.
Yes.
Having no other business today, that's it. Thank you, Anna. Wasn't that like the king of